From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions. Talking all
Talking all things
Big Ten football. One of the cool, I think it was a Cosmo commercial. I don't know, like there's these like kind of Latino European looking dudes like grab a cup that holds some flowers in it in the lobby of the hotel or in the, and they just go around and say we're champions and they're all partying and everyone's like celebrating with them and stuff. And then they put it back and just put the flowers back in it. It was like, wasn't it just some made up thing? It was a pretty good Vegas commercial. Champions.
Never seen it.
You haven't seen that one?
No.
It's pretty good. I like that one. We got a big show for you today. We're going to have to keep it shorter. We're live on YouTube. But I do have a dentist appointment after this, so we got to get out of here. But we got a bunch of games.
He's got to get his teeth fixed.
Yeah. No, it's just a cleaning. I do. Do you do, how often do you do cleanings?
I don't know. Once every 6 months. What's okay. Recommended?
I think it's six. I've been doing four just to like, you know, just to try it out.
Whatever. I sound like Yoda.
Four, you say? clean your teeth must be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to do our show and we're going to do the reviews next, next show. We do have some new reviews. We want to give away some more Trader Joe's gift cards. I got some stories about that. You can email us, Big10Cast, T-E-N, cast at gmail.com, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got four voicemails for you today. Twitter, at B1G Podcast, and then, of course, the Apple Podcasting app. Leave us a five-star review. We love that. We'll put them all together. We're going to give some gift cards away on Thursday when we do our preview show.
Great.
Yeah.
Love it.
We're going to do that.
I'm excited.
So I'm excited about that too. We had a pretty good week picking games. We were both 5-3, so we got better. If you followed us over at MyBookie, which you can do, MyBookie.com. You go to MyBookie, and if you use the promo code POC, your initial deposit will be matched 100%. Last week, if you faded us, you would have done pretty well because we went 3-5. This week, you would have made a little cash if you followed David and I. We both picked one game differently and. Well, two games differently total, and then we split those. So, but we went 5-3 overall. Not too bad. Our first games out of the gate are always bad for some reason. Like, we can't get that first one.
No.
There was no Friday game, but it was the early.
Neither we nor James Franklin can get that first one.
No. And so we're going to get to all that. But make sure you go over to MyBookie. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie. Go check it out.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And POC is the promo code. You got to do that. Yeah, and if you're putting your comments and stuff in the chat, I will look up. I will try to put them on there. But again, we're going to have to go a little quicker today just because there's a lot of crap going on. Thank you to Matthew. We are absolutely done with the Survivor pool. We're done. It was a tie. So it is done. All three players picked the wrong winner. So Griffin took Illinois, while Pickle and Moosey took Nebraska. So we've come to a three-way tie. Congrats to everyone who played, and see you next year. He said, if I can handle continuing to listen to pregame analysis of crappy matchups like Purdue Northwestern in a conference my own crappy team doesn't even compete in. Thank you, Matthew, again, for all of the hard work there. We appreciate it so much. And yeah, so what we'll do is we got new $31 gift cards. So all three of you, I will send you one. So email me your address, and I will send you a $31 Trader Joe's gift card. Thanks to John and Brea.
Love John and Brea.
Yeah, he is great. And I actually brought one because someone, I forget who it was, someone in the chat said, hey, I'll email you about our tailgate. So I brought one of those gift cards. I was going to give it to him for inviting me to the tailgate, but then I never heard back, or I heard back at the very end. People don't, sometimes don't understand, like, we can't tailgate an hour before the kickoff. Like, we have to tailgate, like, 4 hours, like, for a little bit, and then we go in and go do work. At least I do. I don't know if that's what you do, David.
I don't go to games.
Yeah. Well, you did go
except
to
except this past weekend.
You did go to games, so that's cool. So lots of fun stuff.
So many things to discuss this week.
Yeah. Do you have anything up top before we kind of jump in?
No, I am ready to dive into these football games.
All right, so let's go. I haven't like organize these all myself. We're going to go through our power rankings in reverse order, and I'll have to pull up the who's doing what in all these games. But here first, we got number 18.
Purdue Boilermakers.
And I mean, the game of the week, obviously. They were hosting
Northwestern Wildcats.
This is the kind of epic struggle, the kind of, you know, when things just kind of go above the plane of the reality that we're currently dealing with, and they, you see it on kind of a cosmic scale. That's what we were witnessing. This is the kind of thing that if we were back 3,000 years ago, the story of this game wouldn't be written down. It would be passed down from generation to generation via oral tradition. Northwestern in overtime, taken down mighty Purdue 26-20. We got this one right.
We got it right. It was a 1-point spread.
Thankfully, when it went to overtime. Ryan Walters, at the end of this game, they were facing a 4th and 5 in overtime.
Overtime, right.
On their own 20, or on the 20 for Northwestern. And he elects not to kick a field goal. Now, his field goal kicker had missed one from right hash earlier in the game. He'd missed a 39-yarder, and this was, I think, going to be a 37, 38-yarder. Elects not to go, and then instead goes for it on 4th and 5, doesn't get it. So Northwestern was in a position where it only had to score anything, and they would win the game.
It's tough when you don't score the first possession of overtime.
Yeah, it's real bad. But not content to just take a field goal, they threw a semi-dangerous pass to score the touchdown and win ultimately 26-20. You know, I'm joking about the game. It wasn't that bad to watch. Like, it was fine. I was kind of watching it half, you know, I was watching it on two screens. I was watching this one and the other two at the same time. But this, it wasn't a horrible game. I think both teams had moments. Purdue had to come storming back to tie it and make this one competitive going into overtime, and they did. But Northwestern, I think, is just fundamentally a better team, and they kind of showed that.
They outplayed them, and it didn't seem like it should have gone to overtime, but Purdue got a little plucky there at the end. That 4th and 5 decision was kind of questionable, and then scoring the touchdown. I think the right result happened, but the way you got there was a little bit interesting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, Northwestern, like, we're doing a lot of joking about Northwestern, and with good reason. But they are 4-5 now, which is very similar to the record of another team I know.
Yes.
I think they hail from Southern California. I think they might be called the University of Southern California. They're also 4-5.
They are 4-5.
Who can say which team is better?
It's tough.
Northwestern or USC?
Well, our rankings, you know, our power rankings trump all. But
I mean, we'll call them your power rankings. How about that?
This week. Well, yeah. You looked over them.
Both of these teams have lost to Washington. However, do you know what Northwestern has a win over? Maryland Terrapins.
They did, yes.
You know who doesn't have a win over the
USC?
Mighty Maryland
Terrapins? Does not.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. We could move them around a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Number 17, we got
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
They were on a bye. We also have number 16,
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap,
snap. Also on a bye, so we don't have them. Number 14, we already talked about Northwestern. I'm sorry, 15, Northwestern. 14, we've got
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
I mean, if you were... Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they had to host our number 2 team,
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
And, you know, this one.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Yeah, that was a rough one.
If you were only basing it off the first quarter...
10-0.
Wow, Michigan State. Powerful stuff. Yeah, Indiana, they killed them. 47-10. 47 unanswered. Curtis Rourke came back from his thumb injury, and it looked like that had been no issue whatsoever with him throwing a football. He was throwing with good velocity. He was throwing with good accuracy. There was absolutely no issue. So if you've one of those sickos with a college fantasy league and you were waiting to see if Curtis Rourke can throw a football,
He still can.
He still can. Yeah, Aiden Chiles, once again, random number generator. Some good stuff in the first quarter, a couple of bad turnovers later. It's so weird because he's Jonathan Smith's handpicked guy. And so on one hand, yeah, okay. But on the other hand, he's so not a Jonathan Smith quarterback.
He's not.
Like, the decision-making has to be so much better. And maybe he gets them there. I mean, he's really good at developing quarterbacks, but man, oh man. But I mean, the story of this game is just Indiana. I mean, they're just, you know, taking a little bit to get in a rhythm early, but once they did, just killing Michigan State and taking advantage of turnovers, just playing smart football. It was steady after that first quarter. And just, I mean, honestly, I think they kept their starters in a little bit too late in the game. And it was, you know, maybe you could call off the dogs a little bit there, Kurt. But
he knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Yeah, can't do that.
But we're now at 9-0 Indiana. They host Michigan, I think, this week. And then it's Ohio State. That's going to be, I mean, very likely that's going to be a battle of, well, not undefeated because Ohio State lost to Oregon, but it's going to be a top. I mean, what will Indiana be? They're number 8 now.
Yeah.
Win over Michigan, maybe a couple other losses. They might be close to the top 5. Another top 5 battle in the Big Ten or something close to it. That's going to be a big game. And then it's Purdue. So 11-1 Indiana seems like the floor at this point.
Who's going to beat them outside of Ohio State? Yeah, no way.
And, I mean, look, we all joke about Indiana, but here's the thing. They haven't played anybody. Sure. Okay, fine. That's fine. They're murdering everyone. They're killing them. Like, they killed Michigan State in a way that Michigan State has not been killed this year.
Yeah.
Like, murdered them.
Yeah.
And it's just been that way since the beginning of the season. And I don't know. Like, they haven't been tested by a team as good as Ohio State or maybe even a team as talented as Michigan. Maybe. But they're killing everybody.
Yeah. We were high on Indiana coming into the season, but I think we picked them to have like 8, like after 3-9 last year, I think we might have picked them 8 or 9 wins. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
And like we way underestimated it, which is insane. We got UW dad. So he says, first time Indiana did not lead in a game. So good for the Spartans.
That's true.
Yes.
They were 15 minutes.
They were down 10-0.
That's right.
And then something happened and it was called Signetti Kills. It was just bad. But congrats to Indiana. We got this one right. This is like the freebie every week. Like, of course, Indiana's going to cover. Like, somehow this was only, what was the spread? 8-point spread? Yeah. So 47 straight points. Signetti kills. I don't know what else you need to know.
Signetti kills.
This is not, you can't, I don't think it's a referendum on Michigan State. It just doesn't count. It just doesn't count.
It doesn't count. What Indiana does to teams, it does not count. They are killing you. No matter what, they're going to kill you. You might end up better at the end of it. You might end up worse, but they're going to kill you no matter what.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we got number 13.
USC Trojans.
And they were on the road in Seattle taking on number 7.
Washington Huskies.
This was totally a game that I think dictated a run-pass split of 50-29 for USC, right? Ooh,
yeah, first half, you know, 30 dropbacks for Miller Moss and 8 runs by a running back.
Washington won 26-21. And I guess, like, look, I understand USC fans are a little bit, you know, they got their hopes up about this season. But to take this group of just scrappy underdogs and go-getters, go on the road up to Seattle against, correct me if I'm wrong,
they were in the
one of last year's playoff teams, a national title contender last year, and play a one-score game where you had, I mean,
pretty tight.
You had a lead late. I mean,
another fourth quarter lead.
All of that, I mean, they're so close. They're inches away, literally inches in this game.
Like a one play away.
And I'm with Lincoln Riley. It's just, I think USC fans, it's understandable. You're impatient. But to come out of sanctions and then to, you know, after Clay Helton was unfairly dismissed from the program and the entire team and program and fan base was demoralized after that, to build them back to this point, I mean, I think it's time to maybe talk about a Lincoln Riley raise.
Extension, maybe.
Extension, especially of the buyout.
Yeah.
You want to give him the security and you want to give the fans and players security that he's going to be the coach for the long haul, 10, 15 more years.
Hey, real quick, go for insight. I wonder if the weather was really good. So USC just passed a lot. It was raining. So, yes.
All right. So there was a lot of interesting stuff in this game. So Washington had full control of the game early because USC just refused to run the ball in the first half.
Like, it was literally refused.
It was 20-7 at halftime. And then out of halftime, it's like somebody hit Lincoln Riley in the head with something, maybe like a reverse piano. And he's like, hey, oh, wow, we've got Woody Marks. He's pretty good. Let's run the ball with him. And so he did for a while. Amazingly enough, it worked.
Yeah.
And they
were running on like third and six and picking up first downs.
Correct.
Which was like, this is not.
Yeah.
That's not what Lincoln Riley does.
And they scored 14 quick ones.
Yep.
And so they had the lead going into the fourth quarter. And then his brain got bad again. Because his brain isn't very good, because he's kind of stupid. I think the big thing about Lincoln Riley to understand is he is a guy who has been convinced he's a genius who's actually not that bright. Like, average intelligence, maybe a little bit below average, but so many people have talked him up because he can draw squiggly lines on a piece of paper that he's convinced himself he's a genius. And so take me through the goal line sequence, Ryan. So we're sitting there looking at it's first and goal from the Washington 4, and they run it for half of that yardage with Woody Marks on first down. So, again, through that point of the game, and this is when USC is down by 5 with about 5 minutes left to go in the game, they run it for 2 yards, right? So they've gotten half the yardage already that they need to get to score a touchdown. Yes. And running has been their best thing.
100%.
Right? What do they do next?
Throw a pass.
They throw a pass through the back of the end zone. Is that correct?
Yes.
That
was like you just couldn't get – you had to – it was like you just had to. Like,
yeah.
We can't just – I'm not going to run because that's what everyone wants. I'm going to throw a ball.
Yeah. So anyway, they then run it twice more, and to Washington's credit, they stopped both of those runs. But they were, again, kind of weird. Like they –
one was a toss, and then it was like fourth and
fourth and one, and then it just got dropped for a 3 yard loss. But there's an epidemic of coaches who, when they get to like the one or the two on short yardage, they just refuse to call a quarterback sneak. They're just like, no, we're not doing that. And it's like, well, this has been proven to be very successful at basically every yardage on the field. You just get your big fat guys to push the kind of skinny guy who is your quarterback into the end zone.
Yeah.
And that works really well. And they didn't do that. And so they turned it over on downs at the Washington 4. And then, it wasn't quite game over at that point because Jed Fish.
Oh, my God.
Is also.
There was a Jed Fish piano moment.
Oh, my God. He's maybe the dumbest person alive. On third and one on their game-sealing drive, or what should have been their game-sealing drive,
literally,
What does he do?
12 men on the field.
12 men on the field. But what does he do? Why is Williams in the game at quarterback at that point? Why are you experimenting with that crap at that point in the game?
Yes.
Just put in your quarterback and run the ball up the middle.
Or your QB sneak, if you
do anything other than trying to change your personnel packages at that point in the game. Just end the game. It isn't that complicated. Jed Fish, very stupid person. This was very much a stupid coach off. and then, I think from a player standpoint, I know there's an infight within the USC fan base about this, and I don't want to get into it too much. Miller Moss was not good in this game.
No,
was he put in a good position because he was asked to throw it a bunch against a really good pass defense? No. But at the same time, he's not making good throws. And he's making too many throws that are just going into the teeth of the defense. There's some throws that are really good. There was that touchdown pass to Mekhi Lemon after a horrible decision on third down, the third and nine. Then on fourth and nine, he hits that touchdown to Mekhi Lemon, and it was perfect queen stride the whole thing. But he's just making too many mistakes for a guy who can't erase mistakes, you know?
Right.
Caleb Williams can erase mistakes, so he can, you know, do some things. Miller Moss, you've got to be the game manager. You have to be that guy. And some of that's on Lincoln Riley. You got to call a game for a game manager. But also, Miller Moss has to make better choices.
Yeah.
Three picks in this game. I mean, it's you can point at that number and say that's why they lost.
Yeah. I mean, one of them hit the receiver in the hands, and then the other one was a Hail Mary. The third one in the second half was bad. But he shouldn't be throwing it 50 times against the number one pass defense in the country. Like, it was a stubborn moment from you. This was out of whack, the passing. 30 dropbacks for Miller Moss in the first half. He ran the ball once himself, and there were 8 Woody Marks runs. That's it. No Quentin Joyner, nothing else. It was almost like, okay, we should run the ball more than our normal ratio. So what we're going to do, we're going to run it less. Like, almost like to prove to everybody that I'm smart. And it didn't work, and you're down 13 points. And then they did what they should have done from the very beginning afterwards. Kyle pointed out this was the first time Washington was outgained. And this was a big one for both. We both got this right? Yeah, we both took Washington. I think Washington's path for a bowl game is a lot tougher if they lost this game than if USC's. But both teams are going to, you know, now USC's in a you know, they're going to be struggling to try to make a bowl game.
Washington has to beat UCLA. That's really the path.
Because the other two are not, like, very winnable.
USC has to beat both Nebraska and UCLA.
Yeah. So it's still tough for Washington. But if Washington lost this one, it was almost impossible for them to make a bowl game.
Zeroed out. Yeah.
We got a couple super chats.
Ooh.
Let's start with Colt. $20. Wow. Oh, wait. Sorry. The wrong one popped up there. Wait, where did it go? Did I lose Colt?
Colt's up there.
No, here. Did it pop up?
You want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dion voice. Do you believe, Dave? Did you believe? UCLA still undefeated in my son's lifetime. Remington Steele. What am I reading? Bush. Remington Steele Bush is obviously bringing UCLA a national championship next year. Get on the bandwagon now. Keep it mediocre. I don't know if I was supposed to do the whole thing in Dion voice, but I did.
Okay.
Was that a good Dion voice?
No.
No.
That's okay, though.
It's hard because it's like gravelly and it's kind of clipped.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
like
hard.
You know, it's like you know it when you see it, like you hear it, but it's not. I don't think it's easy to replicate.
No, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's so gravelly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Colt. You're the man. Remington
cool,
Steele Bush. I'm excited for his life because it's been... maybe he is the prince who was promised, and I was some sort of cursed demon, because as soon as I started really following UCLA is when basically the 25-year clock started. So maybe, you know, maybe the light of a new dawn.
Yeah.
You know?
And then Matthew gave us a super chat, $5. Love you guys. Who do you think wins the victory bell as of right now?
If it's a close game, UCLA, of course.
Yeah, because USC's not won close games.
But if USC, I mean, USC theoretically is more talented. But no, I think it's going to be a close game. I don't really know at this point.
Yeah,
I need really to see a couple more weeks of this these two seasons going.
Yeah.
UCLA, we'll get to UCLA in a little bit, but this Friday's game against Iowa is suddenly huge for them.
Oh,
because
yeah,
if we're talking about bowl picture, UCLA's not quite out of it now.
Which is crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But they need to beat Iowa this weekend.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. We've got, speaking of, number 12, we've got
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
And if you remember, this team was ranked 18 for a while, and David was refusing to get them out of this basement. They're all the way up to number 11.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Winners of 2 straight Big Ten road games. The UCLA Bruins. They went into Lincoln. I went into Lincoln.
You went to a game.
I went to a game. Great town. Great people. UCLA was beating that ass. It was 27-7 at one point in this game. My largest takeaway from this game is that Dylan Raiola, and this is from observing in stadium, I'm not sure how it looked on TV, but Dylan Raiola should have been pulled as early as the first quarter and maybe as early as the first quarter, certainly at halftime. I think there was a I understand it's hard to manage a freshman quarterback and his psyche and the whole thing. He was never going to win this game for them. And I'm not being facetious. I'm not even joking. Watching him out there, UCLA would change the picture like right pre-snap. They would show him something and then they would change the picture. And you could see his panic set in as soon as he received the ball. And he would immediately start just kind of moving to the right and not know where he's going and just throw the ball away. And there were open receivers. It wasn't as if UCLA was suddenly locked down on defense. They were just changing his picture a little bit pre-snap, confusing the hell out of a freshman quarterback, timing some zero blitzes where they were sending six or seven guys, and he was done. Even his two deep bombs downfield, again, if you weren't watching in stadium, you might have missed this, but his first two deep bombs downfield, both of them were horrible decisions, absolutely horrible decisions to throw those balls. Could have been picked. The first one was so poorly thrown and in such a weird space that it actually caught the defense off guard, and the receiver, because he had eyes on him, was able to just like kind of scoot over to the left, way away from his route to run under it. But it was a horrible throw, horrible decision. He had receivers underneath who were in much safer positions for first downs, and that was really the story of the game for him. He had underneath stuff, and then he would just try to throw something stupid when he was throwing. The pick six coming out of halftime, he had the tight end on a seam open.
Yeah.
And then 2 seconds later, he decides to throw a slant, which the linebacker, Kane Medrano, actually bit on the run fake on that play and was dropping back in desperation to try to cover the tight end. And he didn't even throw to the tight end. He throws it to the slant receiver, and he gets picked. He was really bad, and it put Nebraska in a huge hole that they couldn't recover from. And UCLA's defensive coordinator and defensive staff did a great job. That's what you're supposed to do against a freshman quarterback, just confuse the hell out of them. But they should have pulled Raiola earlier. Harburg, their backup, he came in late after Raiola got hurt.
Yeah, he went down.
Because Raiola took a huge hit. Harburg came in, and it wasn't perfect. I mean, he threw a game-sealing pick, but he was so much more decisive.
That pick was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Kicked up ball.
off his knee.
Yeah. But they were driving to try to tie it 27-all. They were down by 7 in the closing minutes. And he was much more decisive. Like, he was hitting intermediate stuff. He was doing all the things that a more experienced, seasoned quarterback should have been doing all game. UCLA, for its part, Ethan Garbers once again played nearly a perfect game. He was making great decisions with where to put the ball, didn't have any turnovers, had another great scramble for 57 yards in this one, showing off again that he's got some wheels. He's not, you know, a pure statue back there. They kind of fell apart a little bit in the end of the game. Basically, the opening drive of the third quarter, they didn't score. It was a lot of just run, pass, punt, and then some lack of aggression at certain points. I thought UCLA, they had a 4th and inches at the Nebraska 8. They kicked a field goal instead of going for it. They had a 4th and 1 late that was probably a go because it would have ended the game or nearly ended the game. But you can't complain too much when it's the second straight road win, and it does change the complexion of things for UCLA. We'll get to that more in the preview show. Nebraska, this also changes the complexion of things. Suddenly, bowl games a lot harder to see. They have to go at USC, then they host Wisconsin, then at Iowa. All of those could be losses. I think in aggregate, they should win one of those. But if Raiola continues to play like this, if he continues to look like he has like crash test dummied into the freshman wall, this is going to be tough.
It's a tough one. I got this one right, right? I took UCLA and those 6 points. Somehow you did not. Yeah. We got a voicemail about that in a little bit too. Colt says, so UCLA hasn't won a home game in over a year. USC hasn't won a road game in over a year. So that's the LA story right there, folks. And they're gonna play in the Rose Bowl. So who knows? Maybe both of those streaks will still be on the line. We will see. But and it's funny, UCLA was complete control, and then the only reason, I mean, I don't correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first two or three, it might have been all the Nebraska touchdowns, they were aided by UCLA personal foul penalties.
Yeah, it wasn't personal fouls. It was unsportsmanlike conduct. Two of them, so one of them I think was literally for a player saying something, which, okay. One was, I think, legitimate, and then one was for pulling off a pile. Literally every single Nebraska touchdown came when UCLA had a 15-yarder for unsportsmanlike conduct. Two of them came when Dylan Raiola threw moon balls that should have been picked off.
Oh, yeah, that was a killer. Like, that was...
It's just... I mean, there's a world not too distant from here where UCLA holds Nebraska to like 3 points in this game.
Yeah, that was like completely aided by all that. Okay, yeah. Next up we got number 10.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow, scratch, 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 scratch.
And they were hosting...
Oregon Ducks.
Number one, Oregon Ducks.
My big takeaway from this one is that the cover was really never in doubt. Oregon was obviously 14.5 plus points better than Michigan at all points in this game.
Not until
there was never a moment where I was like, I'm not sure if Oregon's going to cover. I will say this. Oregon was
it was a 14.5 point spread. David took Oregon, I took Michigan. Michigan was covering until they they didn't even call a timeout. Like, Michigan could have called a timeout to preserve time. They were just kind of letting them run out the clock, and Oregon punched it in anyway for like the garbage touchdown. Like,
that's
it was
right.
So weird. Like,
well, they had to make up for all the shaving earlier in the season.
It's like reverse. This was reverse shaving. They were like, we're going to cover this one just to prove those guys in the POC that we're not shaving points.
So it was probably a slightly more even game than the final score. I will say, for Oregon to go into that stadium, win by 21, even if it was maybe a little bit, you know, I mean, Michigan turned it over on downs way on Oregon's side of the field, and then Oregon drove it down for 8 minutes to score that final touchdown. It's not quite a turnover swing, but that is that's a swing of where the score maybe should have fallen. But I will say, it felt to me like a continuation of kind of the more dominant Oregon we've seen of late. Just watching it. There were moments where the game was close-ish, but it never felt like Oregon was really threatened in any real way by Michigan. It felt like they were just steady building the lead for most of the game.
Yeah, but it should have been closer. Like, the way it was
played. It should have been like a 10 to 14 point game, yes. Probably. But I never felt like it was really in doubt,
no.
I guess is my
Oregon
point.
Was going to win, but it wasn't going to be like this blowout thing. And there was just some weird crap that was going. Oregon up 11. They're about to punt. And Michigan gives an illegal formation. They lined up someone on the center and gives the Ducks a first down. They go and score. It's like, what do you do? You can't give a team like that extra possessions. There was just some boneheaded plays on the Michigan
but
side.
I will say, just for Oregon to do what they did offensively against this Michigan team, like, I don't know. When was the last time somebody scored 38 on Michigan? I mean, it's not been this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas scored 31. I think that's the high for this year.
The Texas game felt like they were just blowing them out. Like, there was not going to be.
Yeah, and this wasn't quite like that feel, but no, I mean, it's been a hot minute since Michigan gave up 38. It's not the last 2 years, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Not that year before either. I don't know. I mean, this was, I guess my point is, this is a really impressive, it was 2020. This is a really impressive
Oregon, really freaking good
showing for Oregon. I think they're now at the point where they've rounded into form as a true national title contender.
Yeah. Do you see that one? I don't know what Michigan was doing. Michigan was down like the 14, and they were down 14. They're in the red zone. Orgy didn't step out of bounds, but the refs like said he did, and it got called back. And then it was 3rd and 7. They ran it up the middle. You're like, what are you doing? And then 4th and 4, they ran this reverse pass, and they threw it to Orgy, and it was like way out of bounds, and he runs into the – it was like, what are you doing? It was just the weirdest freaking stuff. And then Oregon goes down and
– I will say, again
– they had the ball down 14. They should
have scored. Big takeaway from Michigan, and you can, again, have a lot of complaints in the whole thing. You can't say that Sharon Moore isn't trying stuff. Like, they were trying some stuff.
Yeah.
It's just not all that's going to work.
Davis Warren, like, okay, you know, I think he's your best option. But they used Orgy in some weird ways in this one. Feel bad for Michigan, but man, Oregon is just, they're looking really good. I'd love to see them play Indiana. That would be a lot of fun.
Yep.
We got number 9.
Wisconsin Badgers.
And they had the unfortunate task of going to number 5.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Oh,
So Iowa killed them, obviously, 42-10. I think a big part of this, like, and the way it looked at the final was Wisconsin just being absolutely incompetent offensively. I think Braden Locke, speaking of guys who have kind of run into a wall, his last couple of outings have not been good, and he has not looked good, and he's not making great decisions. And yes, this came against Iowa, but this Iowa defense is not, it's not last year's Iowa defense. Like, they're pretty good, but they're not lights out. They're not killing teams the way they were last year, just with their pure defense. Wisconsin just kind of back to just scuffling at the quarterback position. And then defensively, they had no answer for Caleb Johnson. And I think it does help that Brendan Sullivan is out there, you know, able to carry it 9 times for 58 yards. You know, that gives them somebody who's offsetting Caleb Johnson, because they're not really going to do it through the pass. You know, he was, you know, not a whole lot better than Cade McNamara throwing the ball. He was 7 of 10 for 93 yards, but his threat as a runner, and then he's, you know, accurate enough on some short stuff that it allows a little bit more space for Caleb Johnson to work. And Caleb Johnson's one of the best running backs in the country. So it's not that complicated. Iowa, you know, I think took advantage of a Wisconsin team that, again, the quarterback play has just not been good the last couple of weeks. And Iowa's, you know, at this point, we can definitely say Iowa is better offensively than they were last year.
Yes.
Their running game is something that's something you can actually lean on.
Fourth game, scoring 40 points.
That's right, baby.
Scoring 40 points, and you didn't even throw for 100 yards. They did that pregame blackout thing. They looked kind of cool. This was a tough environment for Wisconsin. Our buddy Matthew in the chat, he says he's a rational fan. He hadn't been this pissed off watching Badger game in like 10 years. It was a tough one. I mean, this was sort of one of those things where just everything's going to go Iowa's way. They don't have to throw the ball. They can run the ball. You put in, you know, Brendan Sullivan, who looks effective and kind of making things work. They were messing around a little bit early, but then he just took control. Once they went up 14-3, it was like, all right, this is over. They ran for 152 yards in the first half. I guess it's the most that they had run for in like 5 years. But they were just in control this one. We both took Iowa -3. Obviously, it wasn't even close there. But this is a, you know, team has lost 3 games. But do you want to play the Hawkeyes? Like, that they can actually score some points? And no, I don't think you want to. Like,
I mean, it was a certain kind of game in the first half, and then it became an entirely different kind of game in the second half. And I think a huge part of it was those two interceptions from Braden Locke. The first one broke serve and allowed Iowa to go up essentially another score.
Yeah.
So it became a 14-3 game at halftime instead of otherwise. And the second one out of halftime was sandwiched in between two Iowa touchdowns. And it's just, Iowa's not the same team it was last year. You have to be able to score a little bit to beat Iowa. And I don't know, just critical mistakes. And yeah, you're playing your backup quarterback. That sucks. Like, and I get it. But Wisconsin looked like it was building something against those really weak teams midseason. And now it's kind of dissipated again.
Yeah. All right. We got now number 8. Let me find it.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
They're playing number 6.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yeah, Minnesota went into Champaign, one of the toughest environments anyone can imagine. It might be, actually. I'm talking shit. I think Illinois is actually a fine place to play a game.
Yeah.
And knocked off number 24, Illinois, 25-17. It was 17-16, Illinois late. They had seized the game back after trailing for much of the second half.
They just fell apart.
Yeah, and then Minnesota drove all the way down the field for a go-ahead touchdown with, I don't know, about 5 minutes left. Then Illinois turned it over on downs. Then Minnesota kicks a field goal. But, you know, Illinois still has a chance at that point, a little under 2 minutes, and then they fumbled away on their final possession. Illinois, I would say they threw it better against Minnesota than I was expecting. And actually moved the ball better. They just couldn't score. That was kind of their fundamental issue in this one. And I think Minnesota ran the ball really well. Probably their best game running the ball in a long time. You know, Darius Taylor had a really, really good game, and that helped them a ton. But Too many turnovers for Illinois. Missed field goal, I think, was significant. Two turnovers, two fumbles, no bueno.
Yeah, this was like statistically, it was pretty even. I think, like you said, Minnesota ran the ball better than I thought they would against Illinois. We both took Illinois plus three in this one. We got it wrong. But the turnovers, I think, were the killer. It just seemed like they weren't able to. I think they sustained drives okay. They were actually, both teams were pretty good on third down, so they were able to like keep drives going a little bit. But it just was something with Illinois couldn't finish them off, and having those two turnovers, I think, was really, really, really tough.
Minnesota's bowl eligible now.
Yeah, I mean, a good win for Minnesota. They've looked really good as of late. So they've actually played some teams where Wisconsin got some wins, but they were against the bottom of our power ranking. So this is a good win on the road. We weren't sure what the bounce back was going to be after going to Oregon. But nice win for Minnesota. So PJ Fleck kind of putting some things together.
They're a missed field goal against North Carolina and a missed call against Michigan from potentially being 8-1.
Yeah. All right. We got one more game to talk about. We have number four.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
They were hosting, and it was a really fun-looking environment. Our number three team.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
This game was like actually kind of a slog. It was 10,
it was as fun as you would think.
It was 10-7 within, I don't know, about 5 minutes.
It was like, yeah, it was 10-0, I think.
It was okay. So first, it was 10-0.
Yes, Penn State.
Yeah, with about 5 minutes to go in the first half. Oh, so it wasn't about 5 minutes. Because the pick six came a little bit later. I think I'm conflating that pick six with the UCLA one out of halftime. But it was 10-0 Penn State in the first quarter. They had driven down for a field goal, which felt like it needed to be a touchdown drive, but it ended in a field goal. Yeah, they had first and 10 at the Ohio State 12. And then suddenly all the things that were working just kind of ground to a halt. And they kick a field goal after gaining basically nothing. And then immediately pick six Will Howard. He's throwing it to the outside. It seems obvious pre-snap he's throwing it to the outside. Penn State has it read beautifully, jumps the pass, takes it into the end zone. 10-0. Feels like, oh no.
Yeah.
And then my man Chip Kelly just calls a ton of really good plays and they score a touchdown. And it was so easy. Like the way they scored on that touchdown drive was so easy. Then Penn State goes 3-and-out, and then they do it again, and it looks so easy. And it's like, oh, no. At that point, when it was 14-10 Ohio State, I thought, oh, crap. This might be a blowout. But then Penn State kind of got put the screws on them a little bit defensively, and it turned into this just mud fight. But Penn State really wasn't able to move the ball after that.
No, it was like, tough.
It was really, really hard to do much of anything. There was this crazy play in the end zone where Penn State had a fade to him, and then the Ohio State player actually picked it off on the carom. It was crazy to watch. There were some weird calls, some ref calls. There was one that was like a pseudo fumble that I think they eventually ruled an incomplete pass. That just kind of annoying. But the one I want to focus on is James Franklin at the end of this game. Mm. They have a first and goal at the Ohio State 3. For most of this game, I would say Penn State's running game had some difficulties. Between Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, they had 18 carries for 42 yards.
That's not good.
When Ohio State knew a run was coming, they were stuffing that run with regularity. So Penn State goes on the goal line. And again, this is like when you're trying to assess your strengths as a team, like USC, run the ball. Penn State, against this team, maybe you try to get the ball in the hands of Tyler Warren whatever way possible, right? Whether you want to line him up at Wildcat, whether you want to, you know, have him get a pitch, whatever you want to do, get the ball in the hands of your freak show tight end, right?
I think they avoided him like the plague. Like it was like they were not like I have no idea why they weren't getting him the ball.
The crazy thing was he had been the one to run it to the Ohio State 3 on this crazy, you know, play down the sideline. So they handed off to Catron Allen for no gain. They handed off to Catron Allen for 1 yard. And then they handed off to Catron Allen for 1 yard. It's at the Ohio State 1. Now, at this point, again, maybe I take my freak show tight end, line him up a Wildcat, and just let him go to town. If he doesn't get it, well, you put the ball in the hands of your best player, and he didn't get it. Sad, but that happens. What do? They drop back. I think Tyler Warren may have been the primary option, but he's running like a little flat route that's short of the end zone, well covered. And the other option is throwing it to like your fourth string wide receiver, like in a sea of like four different Ohio State players. Yeah, you're turning my levels down.
Yeah, because you're yelling.
I don't really understand James Franklin. I can't believe that was Andy Kotelnicki calling those plays inside the five. That felt like David Shaw taking over for whoever's offensive coordinator is in the red zone. That was James Franklin. It had to have been.
He was trying to get set up like, for a better field goal.
They called the same thing with their big guard who is basically playing tight end, who does the like little slam thing. They called it like four straight times and none of them worked. Because he's running like this. He should be running like this. You're on the three.
Yes.
Just have him line up at fullback and smash a dude. Anyway, that was miserable. There were 5 minutes to go at that point. It felt like they should have punched it in.
Yeah.
Then this should have been a, you know, which team can score in the last 5 minutes kind of game. I think it was mismanaged by James Franklin.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And Penn State early, like getting that lead, that's what you want, right? You have the environment and everything. Dude, so Ohio State hasn't scored yet. They're going to punt. Taunting on the Penn State player, like he didn't even tackle the guy. The guy just like slid down.
He stepped over him.
So he didn't make the play. It wasn't like you stopped the dude. He catches a ball like, you know, short of the sticks and he slips. And the Penn State player is just there and then walks over him like inexplicably. And then that leads to a touchdown. You're like, okay. And all of a sudden it's 14-10 and it was 10-0. And you're like, this is not good. They did get a stop. Ohio State, every time they had gone for a fourth down all season, they had scored a touchdown on that drive, like nine different drives. But they get a stop on this one. That weird one where Will Howard's running and he knees the ball or kicks the ball into the end zone as he's running in for the touchdown, and it's a touchback. And it's like that's the very penalized play. So that was like you get life there and still weren't able to take advantage of it. Penn State ends up throwing a pick in the end zone right before the half. And he just kind of knew, like, this is not going. There was a bunch of plays like that that Penn State needed to kind of go their way or take advantage of, like, what Howard did there. That screw up. And they just weren't able to. So, Ohio State played well.
And I do have to give my man Chip Kelly some flowers because their closing drive to keep the ball away from Penn State.
He does that well.
Like, the calls to, like, have Will Howard keep it. There was just a lot of nifty stuff on that drive to just, oh, okay, Penn State, you're not going to see the ball again. So good on Chip Kelly.
Let's do our Pac-12 mythical power rankings quickly because most of these teams were on byes. But number 12,
Stanford Cardinal.
They were not on a bye. They got their ass handed to them by NC State.
Yeah.
Stanford's horrible this year.
They are so bad. Number 11,
Oregon State Beavers.
They were on a bye.
Number 10.
California Golden Bears.
They were on a bye.
I think they were on a bye too. Number 9.
Utah Utes.
I believe they were on a bye too.
I think so. Number 8.
Arizona Wildcats.
They should have been on a bye.
They were not on a bye. They got murdered by UCF 56-12. Brent Brennan should be fired. I don't think they can because of buyout issues, but he's a horrible head coach. Absolutely horrible. I'm sorry, Arizona.
Yeah. Number 7.
USC Trojans.
They were at number 5.
Lincoln Riley's a
Washington
beautiful head coach.
Huskies.
Jed Fish is very stupid.
Number 6.
UCLA Bruins.
They beat Nebraska.
Back-to-back wins, baby.
Number 4.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Bowl-eligible ASU went into Oklahoma State and won 42-21.
Yeah, and the game was delayed like 7 hours or something.
Let's
like
fucking go, Denny Kellingham.
Yeah, he's up there. But that was a crazy one. They were thinking about calling the game and, man, with lightning and stuff. Number 3.
Washington State Cougars.
They were on a bye.
Number 2.
Colorado Buffaloes.
They were on a bye.
Number one,
Oregon Ducks.
Murdered the defending national champions.
That's right, baby.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll try to do the questions quick. All right. Back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back here on the podcast of champions. We got a lot of voicemails. I'll play this one. This is from one of our Washington fans, I believe. That's like a Washington thing the band plays. I don't know if that was an actual, if he like recreated it. I'm not sure.
They play the super slowed down version of that.
Yeah, and then they'll play the Washington, like the last part, the da 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 da. It's like the Washington thing. Yeah. But that's like what the band does. This one, we got a Zodiac Killer one.
All right.
You ready?
Mm-hmm. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right, it's me. The resident Rutgers fan. Well, well, well. Ryan, I told you. Every breath you take, I'll be right where you are. I followed you all the way to Seattle. All the way to Seattle to watch that turd, the dirty, rotten, scoundrel Trojans laid on the field. It was so beautiful. What do we do in Seattle? What do the good folks of Seattle do? We produce cereal kits. Eaters, lots of cereal eaters, and the place where college football dreams go to die. Hope that one hurt in the freezing cold wind and rain. I actually almost let you see my face. I was going to come and actually introduce myself to you, but then you tried to pull a trick. You tried to pull a reverse dirty trick on me, didn't you? Inviting me to the press box because, quote, I have a Trader Joe's gift card for you. What do you think? I'm a moron? Who's going to fall for that? What kind of an idiot would just carry around Trader Joe's gift cards in his pocket in the random off chance that his sociopathic podcast listener might show up to the press box? I didn't just fall off the turnip truck yesterday, Abraham. Okay? That's when I knew you were up to some shit. No. Not going to go out like that, my friends, okay? But you'll never know where I'll be. I'm coming. I'm going to keep coming. I did get the scent of your man musk, and I liked it. I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more. No FBI. No FBI. J. Edgar Hoover was a great big giant dick. Get it? Keeping mediocre, boys.
So I did get a DM from our resident Rutgers fan, and he's like, he says he's someplace, and I don't know where it is. I'm like, I don't know where that is. I'm near like where the boats are, and I did bring a Trader Joe's gift card because one of the listeners said they were going to tailgate, so I was going to give them the gift card, and then I was like, well, hey, if we run into the resident Rutgers fan, I would give him the gift card, but he didn't want to meet me.
Wow, that's sad.
Or whatever.
That's sad.
But it's funny, Washington State, if you Google that, like there's a whole Wikipedia page. There's a ton of serial killers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what he's referring to. I mean, Ted Bundy, probably the most famous, right? But
yeah.
A lot of serial killers based in Washington
How
State.
How many serial killers do you think actually listen to the podcast? There's got to be a couple,
well,
right?
Well, we have one for
we
sure.
We know we have one, but like besides that.
I mean, there's probably a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like people who've thought about it at least.
Yeah, like they definitely tortured animals
yeah,
and stuff.
For sure.
Burned, you know, ants with magnifying glasses and things.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got another voicemail. It seems similar, but I guess it's somebody else. I'll play this for you.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Brian Abramowitz from Muskogee, Illinois. And longtime listener, first-time caller. And just a question for David Woods. Preview show a couple times to try to glean some information for my bookie betting. And mybookie.com, of course, proud sponsor, great site. All kinds of prop bets you can make over there with the good folks at mybookie.com. But, David, your analysis was so incredibly on point, and yet you picked against your own analysis over and over and over. To wit, you detailed exactly how Nebraska's freshman quarterback had been the reason for the uneven product that Cornhuskers had put on the field. Five games good, three games dog shit. Boy, if he had bounced back after one bad game, okay. There's two bad games. Now we're heading into a more of a pattern. Three bad games in a row, we're in a situation. Did his high school girlfriend break up with him? We don't know, and we don't care. You were poignantly on, could not have been more right. And what'd you do? You picked Nebraska. Oh, well, maybe it's UCLA. You have a hard time picking UCLA. So then what do you do? Let's try another game. Illinois versus Minnesota. You lay out all the reasons why Minnesota is hot. They've improved play of Brosmer. What a great defensive squad they've been all year long. How much better, on a neutral field, they're the better team. And what do? You pick Illinois. Dave, is it the money? Do you hate money? Are you so left-leaning? You hate winning money? What's it going to take? What kind of incentive would it take for you to go with your own analysis, pick with your gut, get to the Occam's razor truth of the matter, pick with your gut, and have a badass week? If you beat Ryan in your picks this week, I'm willing to send you anything you want. A 1981 Topps Bill Walton, some chocolate chip cookies. I also need your home address. Keep it mediocre, boys.
I'll send you his home address.
Yeah. Please send it.
Was it a guy, Aiden from somewhere? I don't know.
Yeah. It was Brian Rabraham or something.
Yeah.
From Muskogee.
Okay. We got one more voicemail. So that's so good.
Hey, what's up, Ryan and Dave? Last week I came across my Twitter feed a video of David Woods talking on what I think was Nebraska Public Radio about potentially some travel-related and logistics related to UCLA and kind of their football team this year and how things go with Nebraska. And if there's one thing I've picked up over about the last month and a half, it's that Dave really likes talking about these things. So, Dave, I was curious, based on information from the SID at UCLA, do you know when UCLA traveled to Nebraska? And then Ryan, based on whatever Dave answers, do you think, how much of an impact do you think that had on UCLA only putting up 27 points on what is the best FBS program in Nebraska? And also with that in mind, I was kind of curious, Purdue is now definitively the worst team in the Big Ten, and I would say probably the worst Power Four team in the country. If you guys can think back to recent memories to the worst teams in the Pac-12, how many of those teams do you think end up beating Purdue if they were to play head-to-head? Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
2022, Colorado does not beat Purdue.
No, they're so bad. There's a couple Oregon State teams that...
There's a couple Oregon State teams that would have struggled. Those Gary Anderson teams. Some other Colorado teams. I mean, there's a couple of Colorado teams that would have struggled to beat Purdue.
Yeah.
I don't think Purdue's close to where the bottom of the Pac-12 has been. There was that Arizona team, too. That horrible late Sumlin team.
Was it the 0-12? Were they 0-12? Or no. That was...
Jed Fish went 1-11.
Okay.
There was an 0-5. I'm trying to... I don't think there was an 0-12.
Who did
there was a... There might have been 2-1-11.
Colorado did 0-12, right?
All right. Sumlin.
Oh, Washington. Remember the Washington 0-12?
Yeah, so Jed Fish 1-11. The 0-5 Kevin Sumlin team was horrible, but honestly, the 4-8 team in 2019 was also horrible.
Yeah.
Elite Rich Rod team was also not good.
Washington did the 0-12 thing before Sark got there.
Yes. But I'd say Pac-12 era, you're looking at Colorado's, Oregon State's, and maybe a couple of Arizona's that would have struggled to beat Purdue. All right.
I think we got a text from Rich.
Rich and Meridian.
Apologize, Ryan and Griffin and Boise. Definitely missed the end of your email that was read on air last week. I was working and glossed over it. Not an excuse. Just kidding. Please accept. I definitely feel like a dumbass. Go Bruins.
No one needs to apologize.
Yeah, you're
show.
Fine.
Everything's
you're
fine. Good.
He won a gift card. He's going to go buy candy with it and not share it with his dad.
This is a text message. Stanford still has a 247 site. Who's going to tell them? I don't know what that means.
To tell them like that they're bad or?
Or is it, I don't know, is that site pretty dead now? I don't know.
I would assume so. Cal saved Colorado and Arizona from going 0-12, Big Bob said.
That's so true.
Oh, yeah. Cal was, like, they were generous.
Yep.
They're into the socialism stuff up there in Cal. Like, let's help it up. I mean, we were pushing. We really wanted the 0-12 pushes, but that didn't happen.
It didn't happen. All right. Here, I'll read Oxnard Steve, too, since that one was quick.
Okay.
Since the heart of Big Ten country is Los Angeles, I must be in the northwest artery of the Big Ten, taking in the majesty, as David says, of the conference's highest profile game of the day, Trojans at Huskies, a.k.a. mascots who can actually fight. While snowbound plains-dwelling denizens suffer with lesser-quality matchups much closer to their frozen tundras and happy valleys. And since when has a valley ever been happy? Land before time, let's be honest. Oh, and being here in Seattle, it reminds me that there was some question as to whether Shane's wife sounded all of the POC drops or if a child was somehow involved. I can confirm that it is indeed Mrs. Shane. I can hear her calls and giggles above the din of this extraordinarily loud USC faithful crowd. Unless, wait, nope, I was wrong. What I'm really hearing must be Ryan from Boise's 11-year-old son, Griffin, at the game or on a family road trip and with his dad away getting a beer or two, gleefully yelling out all the profanities he learned while listening to the podcast of champions. Keep it uncensored as always, boys. Oxnard Steve.
Thanks, Oxnard Steve. And he will get his gift card, so he'll be... He can do whatever he wants with it. It'll be great. This is from Daver?
Mm-hmm.
Daver?
I think he must have meant to write Dave.
Oh.
Or just Daver.
It may be Daver. Welcome to the Big Ten, USC. I didn't see you on the docks, Ryan. Did you make it into the lake? Why doesn't Washington just play all their games at home, undefeated season? And then, so there was 1-2. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. There was no number, then number 2. Then C. So this is interesting the way he... which Pac-12 or Big Ten coach besides Kenny Dillingham would make the best president? Choose carefully. I will be writing in whichever one you pick tomorrow from Daver. I went down to the docks. I texted a picture of the boats to a friend of mine who's a prominent Washington alum, and she was upset that there weren't enough boats there and said that Judge Fish is killing the program. But then I came back later. There was more boats, but it was as many as they normally have. I don't think you're allowed to play all your games at home. So that would be why. And then for president, I think there's only one choice.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Well, yeah, because you do need to be a sociopath to be the president. And so
David makes that clear. Would you pick anyone else?
No, I think it's got to be Kurt Cignetti.
So, like, if you were like, so when we were doing this, like David Shaw, like James Franklin feels like he could be somewhat presidential, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you were thinking about that, who, I'm not sure who else.
All right, who's got presidential gravitas? Does Shiano have it? He might have it a little bit.
Maybe.
I'm going to say no on Mike Loxley. I'm going to say yes on James Franklin.
Yeah, James Franklin.
No, hell no on Ryan Day.
No, too far. Like some of those guys. Like you don't want Fleck.
No, Sharon Moore. Yes, on Cignetti.
Jonathan Smith.
Ryan Walters seems kind of sharp.
No? He's gonna get fired though.
He's gonna get fired, but then he'll be available to be the president because he'll be fired from a position that pays more. David Braun, sure. Northwestern, that's smart.
Yeah, he could do that.
I don't know. I don't know. Jed Fish, definitely not Jed Fish. Definitely not Lincoln Riley.
Not Dan Lanning. Not.
No. Well, Dan Lanning, you know, I think he'd be detail oriented. He's just the thing with him and Dillingham is that they're both crazy people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't quite know whether they've like eaten human flesh before. Like, you just can't say it for certain.
Yeah.
So I'm a little uncomfortable with those two.
All right. Well, we got one last one, and unfortunately it's long, but let's try to get through this. Is this your turn? I think it's yours, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This is from Jesse. What I learned in Nebraska, my dear podcasters, UCLA fan here, I made the journey to Lincoln, Nebraska last weekend with my 75-year-old dad to watch UCLA take on the Huskers. I have to say the Nebraska tailgate experience was epic, with Husker fans constantly walking up to us saying things like, "Thank you for coming to our great state. Let's have a great game. Handshake, handshake." And then another handshake. And then I sat down on a converted ambulance, outfitted just for tailgating, for a vodka Gatorade shot and some smoked deer sausage. The contrast with last year when UCLA beat USC at the Coliseum, it never felt better to talk a little shit. But you just can't with these Nebraska Cornhuskers. They are the nicest people in America. And I encourage everyone to take this opportunity with conference realignment to go to seemingly random away games. So here's what I learned in Lincoln. 1. A 5-star freshman quarterback is still a freshman quarterback. A 5-year 4-star quarterback, Ethan Garbers, was definitely the better quarterback and the polish showed. 2. Penalties suck. Unsportsmanlike penalties saved the Nebraska offense almost too many times to count.
Yep.
3. Husker football is a celebration of Nebraska culture and it goes way beyond football. Memorial Stadium becomes the third largest city in the state of Nebraska on game day, and every 10 seconds there's an honoring of an injured soldier from Nebraska, a romantic song about corn husking that everyone sings along to like the national anthem, or a quick speech by the governor at halftime, who, I swear, had been drinking. 4. UCLA is way better than the record shows. Akika Maloy is a great DC. Sorry, USC. Overpaid for Lynn. 5. After the invasion of Iraq, when the conflict started to break down across sectarian lines, you'd see car bombs, Sunni, Shia, and Kurd never would have been able to turn down the heat to enjoy their equivalent of Big Ten football. Honestly, we should have just cut a deal with some Baptist general, but I digress. What I saw in Nebraska was a sea of red-wearing Husker fans who kept politics out of Nebraska football and culture and welcomed us Californians for a good, clean game. I only bring this up to provide perspective. We're all Americans, and it really ain't so bad. Just remember, when you're feeling lonely, scared, or cold, there's always a bunch of friendly people in Nebraska waiting for you and just wanting to shake your hand no matter what team wins. They made a fan out of me. Go Bruins. Let's go bowling.
Yeah, cool one. Yeah, I went, I think it's 2006 or 2000, somewhere around there, I went to Nebraska, and that was like Pete Carroll, like murder stomping Nebraska. It was whatever, it was like 50-something. It was just a crushing, but everyone was super nice. Yeah, I think that's a good fan base. I mean, they love their Cornhuskers. It was probably different in the 90s when they were murdering everybody, but very nice people there.
Yeah,
sure. Did you enjoy your time?
I did. I wasn't there very long. I ended up getting in Friday night very late. Then it was pretty much the game, and then, you know, wandering around a little bit beforehand and a little bit afterwards, but didn't have a ton of time for social functions. And then I was out on theoretically a 6 a.m. flight the next morning that didn't leave until 9.
Eesh.
So I was hanging out in their lovely but small airport for 3-4 hours.
I want to point this out. Sound of Siren podcast. The second half crowd at Husky Stadium looked like a USC home game, half empty. That's Husky hospitality for you. That's the one weird thing. Like, USC's lost their 4 road games, and the home crowd had left early on all of them. Not because they were... mostly because they were losing, and like the Michigan fans thought they were going to lose, so they started leaving. It's happened in all those games, but in the Washington game, it starts pouring, and at halftime, a lot of people just left because it was like literally you're sitting out in the rain. So it was kind of funny to see that happen in like four away games where the opposing team won, but fans had left, either thinking they were going to lose or because the weather was crappy.
Mm.
Weird. But weird. Yes. Okay, well, I think we got to wrap it up. That was pretty good. I think we got a lot of stuff in.
We did so much, so well, so great.
If you won one of the top 3 in the Survivor pool, thanks again to Matthew for doing that. Send me ryan@uscfootball.com, your physical address. Resident Rutgers fan, I did bring a card for you. So if you want to send me your address, I was down at the boats. There's federal boat inspectors. Interesting. No, that's completely
fake.
Real. Wait, there was someone in the chat. Said that. So I was it federal, like you could get at Venice Beach, like federal booby inspectors. Yes. Or something. Maybe them, if you'd rather have those. But yeah, they were interested in you. So yeah, give me your address and I will send you that gift card.
Anytime.
Also. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Should we do a pose real quick?
What do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do? Kirk Cignetti something or like.
No?
Yeah, we could do that. Or is that bad?
Is that bad? 15-yard penalty.
Yeah. Don't do that. We should walk over each other, and that would be...
Are you a stick it out like this?
I can't see it on
the screen. Do you stick the gun out like that?
Like this?
What do you do? Like, do you do the, like...
If I was going to do, like, a
fake
gun?
When you're pulling the trigger, are you doing this as if there's a gun there? Or are you, like, trying to still mimic the gun with your fingers and, like, do something like that?
I don't know. I don't do that very often.
What's your finger gun? Let me see your finger gun.
I think I would just do this. This would be my finger gun.
Yeah. Got it.
But... this is your trigger finger, so...
Yeah. So are you pulling that when you're doing your finger gun?
I don't think I pull
a trigger. Or are we trying to show...
I think it's just showing
the gun. Is this a static gun?
and then you got to pull this finger.
I don't. You know? I don't think I've ever pulled.
But that's kind of hard to do because these are connected a little bit. So yes. When you pull this one, it's hard to keep this one kinda, straight.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's something to think about.
It is
something to consider.
Yes.
Maybe our resident Rutgers fan can tell us more.
He
about
probably
this.
Knows.
I don't think that's maybe not his, I don't think preferred his MO. Yeah. Tool.
He likes to be more personal in his work.
Yes. So true.
Blades and such are a little more personal than.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Knives, stabbing weapons.
Bludgeoning or strangulation.
Terminator 2 for everyone out there.
Yes. All right.
Knives, stabbing weapons.
For David Ed Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.